There we go.
So, you know, I went and got a second MFA thinking that now my plays will at least be read and taken seriously. That did happen, but they have been read and taken seriously by literary managers even before that.
Mm-hmm.
However, the difference between having your work taken seriously by a literary manager and having your work produced is eons apart.
Mm-hmm.
Eons apart. In fact, often if a literary manager loves your work, it can be the kiss of death, because artistic directors tend to want to make their own decisions, and they have literary departments almost as a firewall for playwrights. It's like, you know, we're the barricade, we're the screening process. And as you say, the people who have the most confidence and the most pushiness oftentimes are the ones who make it through that firewall.
Yeah.
I don't have that kind of personality. I have a personality where I can put on my own work, mm-hmm. I can put my work out. My work is very unusual. It does not fit into the system of regional theater at all. It's much more in the La Mama, Dixon Place, experimental theater.
Mm-hmm.
But in those theaters, oftentimes you need your own money because they're not rich.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the resources that the other theaters have. So I feel like I've paid a price for my idiosyncratic aesthetic,
mm-hmm.
but I'm okay with that, because that's what I wanted to do. But as you get older and older, you start to feel like, wow, nobody's gonna do my plays once you stop doing it when you were younger. You know what I mean? Because there came a point where I had a child and I couldn't just keep putting on my plays recklessly and spend all my money like I did when I was younger.
Right.
So I, after my husband died 10 years ago, you know, it took me a number of years to get my kind of oomph back. And 3 years ago, I relaunched our company, Sleeping Weasel. And I have been producing my own and other, really primarily women's work. Some men too, though. Because I don't feel that I'm exclusively a women's theater company. I don't think it's only women whose work is marginalized in this country.
Right.
I think men who are writing work that is searing and political in a particular way, and that's highly aesthetic, also are not being produced.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's a political and aesthetic difference,
mm-hmm.
As well as a gender one, of course. Of course that's an issue in this country, but I sort of choose to uphold or hold up the work of artists I believe in who are working outside of the mainstream, who are doing what I call art theater,
mm-hmm.
or live art. And that's yet another sort of subcategory,
mm-hmm.
in your story.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's yet another aspect of this that shows you that women playwrights are not a monolith, men playwrights are not a monolith. There are all kinds of things that come into play as to why a play becomes successful in the mainstream.
Right. Yeah.
Obviously, marketing is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I think is huge is the kind of play that makes people think just enough, but doesn't give you a stomach ache so you can go out to dinner and enjoy that expensive meal after the play.
Mm-hmm.
It's a total package of an evening.
Mm-hmm.
My plays tend to upset people.
Yeah, do you ever find repercussions because of that?
Well, I would say no. I mean, what I would say is that people who don't want to be upset, mm-hmm. are going to avoid the kind of work I do.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I sent my brother-in-law into therapy with one of my plays. I didn't know that was going to happen, you know. I want to be dragged through the mud in the theater myself,
mm-hmm.
but I want to come out the other side. I'm not talking about nihilistic work,
mm-hmm.
but I am talking about work that faces really hard things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that does so in a form that matches it.
Right.
So the form, I want to make a form of surprise as well as content of surprise.
It actually really ties into my first question, which was, tell me about the stories that you write. Why do you choose to write plays?
I think theater is a place of communion, you know, where people can come together and be alone, but yet in community. experience something together, but alone. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing like that feeling. It's like being in church in the ancient Greek way, of that ritual.
Yeah.
Of and I don't think, when I love it, when I go to something I love, I feel like I'm going to live 100 years longer because I saw that. Mm-hmm. And that I'm going to be a better person because I saw that thing. Mm-hmm. And life is more beautiful, and life is more alive, life is more wonderful. Even if it was a thing that totally disturbed me,
right.
I feel more myself. That's why I'm in theater. Hmm. The stories are, I guess I'm writing a lot about things that bother me. This play that Ken is directing in August is about really the charlatanism of the happiness industry in America, and all the ways in which, you know, people who are ill-advised look for cures through pills, and I don't mean antidepressants, I mean all kinds of things,
right.
and cleanses, and, you know, just all kinds of things that could really hurt them, and spend a lot of money they don't have on feeling better and not being helped. And I wrote a really searing satire about that because that was really bothering me. It's multimedia, it's crazy, you know. But it also goes into the real consequences of not getting help.
Yeah.
Some really bad things that can happen to people.
Right.
When they don't have the right help. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes it is the poor and disenfranchised who don't get the right help. They get the worst help because it's on TV that they find their help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people like Dr. Phil, who pretend that they're curing you in an hour, minus commercial time, that to me is very criminal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm often writing about those kinds of things that bother me. But realism is more about the end result of late capitalism and how people become really mean to each other.
Yeah. Which writers do you take inspiration from?
Oh, God. Mack Wellman, Samuel Beckett, Carol Churchill, Gertrude Stein, Maria Irene Fornes, Euripides, Jeffrey Jones, a lot of people.
It's a big range, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Is there anybody in particular that really has, I don't know, just from a young age that you really liked?
Beckett. Samuel Beckett. But Ionesco. Ionesco, I love Ionesco. Love him. But I have to say that I'm really intrigued right now by companies like Nature Theater of Oklahoma and what they're doing, because and Forced Entertainment in England. These groups that have gotten together and are making devised theater, I find it really fascinating. I mean, I'm a playwright and I want to do that through my own vision, but I really like what they're getting at, and I really like working that way now. I wrote a play, it was a U.S. Department of Justice grant play, on basically how sexual experiences can turn out very badly in campus life.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It was through the Violence Against Women sort of department in the Department of Justice that we got this grant. And what I did is I worked with 9 students, and we developed all the before and after scenes of what goes on when people either get hurt or get raped or there's miscommunication, all the different ways. And they acted out the scenes. We devised like what the scene would be, and then they acted it out, but it was filmed. And then I took all that dialogue, it was like 300 pages of dialogue, and made a play out of that. And so I really like that. I really like working that way because it's very multivocal.
Yeah.
And what I was going to say is that's going to be a multimedia play that's going to be on the main stage at Wheaton College where I teach in the spring.
Wow. What's the play called?
What Happens When. Which is a very Beckett title, so you can tell that that's my background. But the play itself is very direct, which is what I wanted. I did not want to aestheticize a story like this.
That's incredible. I mean, I have, you know, I'm really interested in those issues, and so I've looked for plays that really deal with that kind of thing.
This is why I wrote it, because most of them are really bad.
Yeah.
And I said, if you want me to do this, I will do it in the students' voices. Yeah. I'm 30 years older than you. And yes, I can make it up and I'm good at it, but I really want to know on the ground what's happening now. And it was interesting to me because some of it was different, but a lot of it was the same as when I was young. And I hate to say it, but honestly, the hooking up culture hurts women.
Yeah.
It's not that great for women.
No.
I'm going to sound old fashioned, but I don't think it's that hot for women.
Yeah. No, that's I was in a sociology class this semester, and we had a whole unit about hookup culture, and it was just fascinating. Like, you know, people doing studies about even the way that people dance now, like, that shows dominance, and if you're seeing a heteronormative way of, you know, of people coming together, and like that, it blew my mind that people had been, you know, already studying this kind of thing.
It's, yeah.
Yeah.
And what we saw is there really aren't any good plays that we knew of.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to get it into your voices, your generation's voices.
Yes.
And we wanted not to have a play that resolved, because we want the conversation to happen after the play, that students would be affected by it and then continue talking about it. So the play, I mean, I would love for you to come.
I would love to come, yeah.
Good. It's going to happen in April, so stay in touch with me.
Yeah.
April 2015.
I'd love to, I don't know if you'd be able to, but I'd love to get you in touch with the person at Connecticut College who does
sure.
this stuff. She's fantastic.
Claire,
and I actually,
introduce us over email.
I'd love to. She, I'm actually one of her, there's this group called the Safety Net Club. It's Safety Net, and it's, we're educating students on campus about these issues.
Yeah.
And she's fantastic. Yeah.
Well, we have had a huge initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Because 3 years ago there was a big, big incident. Maybe it's 4 years now at Wheaton, where three freshmen were involved in having sex. The young woman said that these two guys raped her. Unfortunately, they were not found guilty of misconduct because all three of them were so drunk that it just... it went beyond the bounds. I mean, she had had like 10 tequilas, they had had like, it wasn't possible to really sort out. Now I realize that if a young woman, part of the reason it stayed with me and continued to outrage me is that if a young woman says no, it's no. If a young woman's intoxicated, then you're not allowed to have sex.
Right.
The problem is they were all super intoxicated. I don't know that any one of the three of them really remembers what happened, except the answers.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter what I think of that, the outcome, but what matters is I want people to understand you just don't do this.
No.
And I'm very old-fashioned. I would tell my student, women students, if you're going to go out to a party and get drunk, there's five of you going to lock arms, okay? Because you don't go back with anybody. You don't let your friends do that.
Right.
Now, that's old-fashioned. But what can we do? We have to protect ourselves.
Right. The great thing about Con is that we actually have a bystander prevention training program. So I've been certified.
It is great.
It's really great because, I mean, it really teaches you, you know, strategies if you're hearing something in another room, if you're hearing, you know, a fight, or if you're hearing something like that, that you can go and even do a tiny little thing that will diffuse the, you know, the energy of what's going on in there, you know? And so that's
absolutely
really...
And by the same token, I say to the young men, you better be respectful. You better understand. You know, it's not just the young women I say, lock arms. Say to the guys, you better understand the boundaries.
Right.
Because you're stronger. You can overpower a young woman. Do you want to do that?
Right.
You know, but it has to be spoken out.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be spoken. Because there's too much that's unspoken.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. Wow, that's really incredible. Do you think that women writers tell different stories than men writers?
That's such a hard question for me because I want to say no. Hell to the no.
Right.
Okay. The reason I say that on my first level of answer is that I do not want to be considered a woman playwright. I am a playwright, and I'm a woman. I don't have the point of view of all women. I don't have the point of view of all men. My heroes are probably equal parts women and men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that probably to your question about women being censored, I would say more so because of that than anything else, women tell different stories. Because in a way, they're relegated to do that. And the ones who tell those stories often can get produced because that's the woman's story and it's less threatening or more recognizable or more pigeonholable, however you want to put it. I would say that my plays are very European and very philosophical. And so, yeah, there's Carol Churchill who's like that too. But if, like I said to you, I mean, my primary influences are probably Ionesco and Beck.
Right.
So,
how are you?
Yes, I'm a woman.
Good, how are you? I'm good.
Right.
But does anybody ever ask men, do you consider yourself a male playwright?
No.
No, because that's the default.
Yeah.
The default is, you're a playwright. They don't consider. I have seen in the papers about a woman playwright, the still unmarried so-and-so. I'm like, what? What am I living? What?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because I was thinking about this when I've been having to write woman playwright on all my emails. And the only thing I can think of people using for men is a male playwright. But male is sex. Male isn't gender.
Yeah.
So there's no, it's, you would never hear somebody say a man playwright. That's
right.
Just not heard of.
Well, because a man can be anything.
Right. Right.
I just recently saw a quote by the president of Harvard, Drew, I forget her last name. She said, I am not the woman president of Harvard University. I'm the president of Harvard University.
Okay.
And I'm like, you go, girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course I'm a feminist, and I just joined the Women's and Gender Study, you know, advisory committee. But I told the head of Women's and Gender Studies at meeting, you know, I want you to know the way I enact my feminism is that I live a separate and parallel life to the sexist world. I enact and produce what I want to see in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not waiting for people to anoint me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that the more we do that, the more we make ourselves visible in a very positive way.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I understand the need to complain. I get all of that. I just don't want to put my energy there.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel good.
No. Yeah. Which writers today do you think are discussing gender on stage? Are really... Or even are just, you know, displaying really good characters on stage? Think people that make you... That strike you. And make
Again,
you think.
I have to say, Carol Churchill's Love and Information that I just read is amazing. Really amazing. Weird thing for me.
Hi.
The weird thing for me about gender on stage is that it's much more about where the inherent truth is in the character than it is particular to whether a good portrayal of gender happened.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that helps at all, but I guess what it is I'm less interested in topical sociological plays than I am in existential, large philosophical plays that happen to deal with gender.
Interesting.
Rather than as a top layer deal with gender.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's so true. I feel like I've heard a lot of women say so far that they really don't like plays that sort of go in with a specific targeted message that, you know, that's it. That's all you're supposed to get from it. But instead, if it's a layer within something, it's definitely a lot more rich.
Where there's truth in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Emotional, universal truth for the woman and the man. You know, I mean, Ken's play, Ugmo and Amy Go Down the Ruski Bowl, is a love story between two men, but it could be between two women. It could be between a man and a woman.
Right.
It's about love.
Yeah.
And it shakes you to the core. And then you also feel how unfair it is the way gay men are treated, but then you also feel that he's saying that's how unfair it is that women are treated.
Yeah.
See, because if something makes me empathize with anyone being mistreated, it makes me empathize with everyone being mistreated.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, definitely.
It makes me a better person.
Mm-hmm.
To expand that way.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. How would you define a strong woman character? Is it important to you to write strong women characters?
I think I probably just do write strong women characters. Because, yeah, I think I probably do. But they're not always nice or good. And I think that's a problem that I've had at times. I don't necessarily think that it's the best thing to show the woman is virtuous. I've had a really wicked dead grandmother who comes back in the form of a peacock, who's very mean and evil. I've had a mother who tries to kill her daughter, but it's because they've been taken over by fundamentalist Christianity. So they do all these wicked things, but that's not me being hateful of women. It's me being critical of being brainwashed. And the daughter gets away. You know, so that's really, so they are strong, those women, but they're not good.
Right. Yeah, I think that some of the parents who I've been talking to have been saying how it's so important, I guess, for, they're always encouraged to write innocent women.
Yes.
Likeable women.
Yes.
Which, I mean, that really reflects on how women are supposed to be in
right.
our society, that they're supposed to always be likeable. They can't raise their voice. They can't.
Correct.
You know.
And it's like, that's not how the world is.
Right.
That's
right.
not. And also, that's not very dramatic.
No, that's true.
It's quite boring.
Yeah.
Medea was a monster. She killed the kids.
Right.
She had a reason. It's a really good play, but she's not a good person.
Right. Have you ever started writing a play and the gender of a main character changed during the writing process?
Well, I often, that's interesting, because I often don't have a gender. I start with language.
Wow.
And then I attach people, characters, to things. So in Sweet Disaster, I suppose the character who was closest to me originally in that play, closest to me or my personality or my voice, ended up being a gay man. And I think that might be partly because I didn't want that character to reflect me so closely.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's a character, her, in that play, who's very much the one wounded by a death. So I tend to create characters who are shards. My plays are kind of abstract.
That's so fascinating, though, that you start with language.
I do. I start with language. A lot of people don't, but I start with language.
So do you just kind of hear
yes.
dialogue?
Yes.
Wow.
And then I write a bunch of stuff, and then I attribute it.
And, you know, when you're developing the dialogue, can you start to figure out that there's distinct voices?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I haven't asked anybody about that yet. But I think people generally start with, like, a character in mind. That's so fascinating.
Yeah, I don't have any of that. I don't have any of that. Stuff just starts to happen, and then I just start to see things.
That's really cool.
But, you know, I'm a poetic playwright.
Mm-hmm.
So language is the place for me,
mm-hmm.
not place. My plays will usually say, you know, place. Something makes you think you're in a room, but it's fleeting.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very expressionistic. They're not... They're in worlds that are not this world with couching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If or when during the writing process do you start thinking about the audience? Do you feel that you write for a certain audience?
I would like to think that I write for anybody. And I always want to think the farmer in Wisconsin should be able to see my plays.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is I've been influenced by modern dance. I've been influenced by theater. I've been influenced by visual art, and so my plays are highly aesthetic. So some people say, I don't understand your plays. I would like them to, and I think if you put your child's thinking cap on, you would totally understand my plays.
Hmm.
They're just meant to be associative leaps into a dream. So I would like to think that anybody can come and see my plays and enjoy them. I don't know if I'm being realistic.
That's really interesting, though. I mean, do you think that audiences have kind of been conditioned to, when they watch a show, they think that they have to, like, dissect it or something, that they have to...
You're just making me realize something. The least educated people and the most educated people like my play.
Huh.
Everyone in the middle who goes to see the regular theater, I didn't follow that because they've been taught how to follow things.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, so...
My daughter is out there. Oh. See, this is the mommy part of the situation. With her friends, and they're trying to get in here. Okay, good, they're out there. Okay, they have somebody with them.
What kind of theater do you think is the easiest to get produced? Do you ever feel pressured to create plays that fit in with this mold?
You know, I don't really have a good answer to that, because I think the kind of theater, it depends on where it's being produced. It depends on, sorry Beth, did he come back?
I haven't seen him yet.
Okay, he went out looking. I'm okay. Sorry, I'm just in the middle of being interviewed, so I'll
sure.
come in, sorry.
Okay,
it's all right. Okay. In a way, it doesn't really matter what I think about that. Mm-hmm. Because if we're talking about the mainstream theater establishment, then I know what kind of plays are getting produced. And they're entertaining, and they're topical, and they might hit certain buttons this year, and once in a while they might be great.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are so many theaters mm-hmm. in this country. I don't mean buildings, I mean kinds of theater.
Right.
That I think if you choose to find the means of production for your work, it will be produced.
Mm.
And you might have to do it yourself, but there's an audience for that. And so my whole ethos with my company is that you can't worry, in a way, about what kinds of plays are actually being produced in this country, unless you're talking about the very narrow field of the mainstream theater establishment, and you want to only fit yourself into that.
Right. Yeah.
I have never fit into that or had a desire to.
Yeah.
So it's not my world,
mm-hmm.
and I don't see that as the American theater.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not usually the kind of theater that I go see myself. I'm not the right audience for it. You know?
Right, yeah.
So I don't want to say anything bad about it, because it's not, it's like apples and oranges.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Are there characters or plays that you still haven't found a place for? Are there outside forces that have prevented you from writing these characters or plays?
Well, I don't think so. Again, I would have said to you maybe 7 years ago, there are outside forces that have prevented me from putting them on.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm just doing it myself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did write a play that was based on a series of letters to George W. Bush when the Iraq War started. It was a multimedia play, and I was watched by the FBI after writing it because I wrote a bunch of threatening letters to the president.
Wow!
As myself. But it was really a fiction, so that I could put all these letters into the play. I got together a group of people, and we wrote the letters on Thursday nights and sent them out every Friday morning for like 6 months. And I wrote that play, and it frustrates me a lot that it never got done. But it did have some readings. It had a bunch of readings. So that frustrates me a lot. And then when Obama was elected, I said, what am I going to write about? And of course, the war continued. So that play is still there, you know. And now I want to write a play about the far right, called Cleanliness, Godliness, and Madness, A User's Guide. And it's going to be a multimedia play, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating. So you would send them every single week?
Every single week. And I mean, in one of the letters I said, maybe I'll just strap a bomb to myself. Yes, and blow you all to smithereens. But it was a fiction. In my mind, it was a fiction that I was using for this play I was writing. But I signed my name.
And the FBI followed you. That's...
For a couple of months, they sat outside my door. But then they realized I was just a little college professor.
That's incredible. Oh, my God.
I should send you the play. Actually, it's on my website. It's on charlottemian.com. You will die.
Okay.
It was so crazy.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. So this is a difficult one. I've had a, you know, everybody sort of answered it differently, but what would gender parity in the theater look like to you?
Yeah, again, it's a hard question for me because there isn't one theater. And yeah. We keep talking about the theater as the theater, but what we're referring to unconsciously when we say that is all the big theaters we know of.
Yeah.
But we're not referring to places like this, mm-hmm. where you can enact your own dreams. And people do it every night of the week here.
Mm-hmm.
What we are referring to is the Calderwood Pavilion, where you and I were going to meet. And my festival poster is there, the first one, Doubles, Demons, and Dreamers, mm-hmm. right there. But that's kind of a riot that it's over there, because we are so subversive. Like, the kind of theater I do would never happen at the Huntington Theater.
Mm.
Okay. And yet, the literary manager there loves my work and has met with me and comes to my shows, right? So, what would gender parity look like? It wouldn't be that interesting to me, because by and large, the kind of plays that would get done there wouldn't be very earth-shattering to me.
Mm.
They would have the women characters who are, and I don't want to necessarily be quoted on that. Do you see what I'm saying? Because I want to make a kind of theater that shakes you out of your boots. So mm-hmm. gender parity in the theater is like, what are you talking about? The bourgeois theater? Or the theater that really rocks this planet?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why it's not as relevant to me a question, because we're constantly referring to that theater as the theater, and we don't even realize we're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's so much theater going on that isn't being advertised because we don't have the money to advertise it.
Right.
But it's still happening.
Yeah, and the problem is those big theaters have so much more of the funding that, you know.
Totally. And in their defense, I want to say, they have to entertain their audiences because they're spending so much money on their buildings and their salaries.
Mm.
And so, you know, I am totally free to do whatever I want because I don't have overhead.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have to collect the money to put on the show, right? But they have to collect millions every year.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That's so true.
So the economics of their situation create an unfortunate circumstance in which they are forced in a way to constantly be guessing what will please their audience.
Mm-hmm. And you never have to think about, am I going to please my audience?
No, I don't want to. In fact, in some ways, I don't want to please my audience. I want my audience to be awakened.
Yeah.
I mean, I want it to be good. I want it to be
right.
high quality.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to assault the audience by any means.
Right.
You'll see the work tonight. But I want you to, like, really have to work with me.
Mm-hmm.
I want to leave you room to work.
Yeah.
In the work of the play. In the enjoyment. I want you to work through the enjoyment.
Okay. Yeah.
You know? So that's a different desire.
Yeah.
It's a different desire. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's challenging.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. Yeah.